Attention, please. Places for top of show. Places for top of show. Hello, and welcome to Twins Talk Theater. We are Cindy.
And Stacy.
And we're talking about theater, backstage life, and all the excitement that the audience doesn't get to see.
Enjoy the show!
Welcome to today's podcast, everybody. Today we are interviewing another person that I knew from CCM, Krissa Lintz. I think we actually started CCM at the same time together as grad students. She went in for, I think your degree is in hair and makeup design or wig and makeup design. Wig and makeup design. That's actually something I want to talk about later. At CCM. And then I kind of lost track of you after that. I know you're currently in Utah. So what? Okay. Well, I guess I have a couple questions for you. Number one, how has your career progressed? Like, how did you get into theater? What led you to CCM and then led you to where you are now? And then two, can you just, you're our first hair and makeup, wig and makeup designer that we've had on our podcast. So can you just kind of talk to us? Super exciting. It's funny because, you know, being a stage manager, we've had like 4 stage managers on and, you know, all this stuff, but having a hair and makeup person is new to us. So then I am really interested to have you kind of chat with us about what it is to be a hair and makeup artist. You know, like, when do you come into the process? How involved are you from the beginning? Are you there through the whole run? Do you just design and leave? You know, all of those little things, just because it's such a area that so few people know about. So that's kind of everything that I want to chat about in a nutshell.
Okay. Let me start with talking about how I got here.
That's always a good place. Yeah.
So I did not go to an arts high school. I know there's a bunch of arts high schools all over the country now, which is awesome. My high school was just run of the mill. Like, my class was 300 students, like, high school.
That's what we were, too.
Yeah. So I did some musicals because I could sing. I liked to sing. And so I just tried out for the musical and I was cast and did some shows, but I was always that actor that was like, what's going on backstage? I really want to just watch what these technicians are doing. And I did some makeup in high school, but, you know, it was just high school makeup.
Right.
So after I graduated school, I had no idea what I wanted to do professionally. So I ended up just leaving it up to chance. I applied to 5 different schools with 5 different majors. One was like architecture, like liberal arts, music, performing arts, and then technical theater. And I went to the first school that accepted me, and that was the Millikan University in Decatur, Illinois. And my degree was a BFA in theater tech and design.
I feel
so lucky because I could have been an architect right now, maybe hating my life. Who even knows? But I feel so
miserable.
Fortunate. Yeah, I feel so fortunate to be where I am and still be working in theater and still doing hair and makeup. Like, I know so many classmates from my undergraduate class of 2006, Millikan University. Yeah. are not doing theater anymore. And that is sad.
Yeah, I think, my graduating class from my undergrad was like 6 people. One of them still does some stand-up comedy. One of them like works at he teaches, but he like does all some community theater stuff.
Uh-huh.
That might be it. I think I'm the only other person that's still doing theater. Like, you know.
Yeah, I think it's so there difficult. Are 2 of us, and my graduating class was 8 from Millikan. So I primarily did costumes, although I did all the things because, like I said, my class was 8 people. So we all had to learn all of the things.
Everything, right.
Which I highly recommend to anyone.
Yes.
Like,
yeah,
get
so
out
do I.
there and see all of the things, see how this piece of the puzzle goes into it, and you'll just have a bigger appreciation for everyone around you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just easier to work together because you know a little bit about what everyone around you is doing.
Yeah. I say that all the time.
Yeah. I mean, I hung lights. Like, I do not speak lighting but I know how to focus.
And at least you know what they're doing, and you're not just like, why are you taking so long? It's like, oh, I've done that. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, you know it's a time-consuming process, and you have a little bit of respect for that.
Yeah.
So during my time at Milliken, there was an alumni that came back and taught an independent study for me, which this was kind of a special thing. Like, I was the only person in the class. I learned how to take a head tracing. I learned how to drape a wig front, and I learned how to ventilate in this class.
That is so rare.
It is so rare. So it was really cool. So I got to do a head tracing, and I built my first wig for my senior, like, musical that I was designing. And that was my first wig that I built.
Do you still have it?
I graduated. I don't have it. This school has it.
Oh.
But I'm sure it looks like crap. Because I looked at my first piece of facial hair that I built, and I was like, oh man, why do you even have this? Like, it looks so bad.
It's your first one.
It was a skill. It's a skill, and you hone it. Like, every time you build something, you get better. But yeah, so when I graduated from Milliken, I had mostly costume experience, and I decided to go to IRTA and, you know, set up my portfolio and some pieces of mine, and Tom Umfred from CCM interviewed me, and he said, I see you have a wig hair, like, this is the only reason I'm here, like, do you want to come to CCM and do wigs? And I was like, I would love to, because I wasn't sure. I was like, well, I could go into costumes, but nah. Wigs but are more exciting to me because I'm a more detail-oriented person, and I liked the tedious work that it is.
To ventilate a wig? Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's how I got to meet Cindy and go to CCM. At that point, the program was only 2 years. So I got in and got out. During my time there, I worked at the Utah Shakespeare Festival in my summers. I ended up staying at the Utah Shakespeare Festival for 6 seasons. For 3 seasons, I was the wig master for the outdoor theater, which meant I was realizing the costume designer's design for the outdoor stage. So 3 Shakespeare shows and
is everybody wigged on that, or wigs depending on what show and what character?
Usually most women have wigs. If a man needs a specific hairstyle, we'll usually wig him, but a lot of times we just give men haircuts and use their own hair.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And, you know, if a woman has the perfect hair for a role, we'll let her use it too. We'll teach her how to style it. You know, it just depends on what the look we're going for is.
So then, because I've never been an actor or anything like that, why don't you always use people's regular hair? Or why don't you always use wig? How do you make that determination on whether it's someone's actual hair or a wig?
People's hair act differently every day. With a wig, you can be more consistent in what the style actually looks like. Where, like, you know, sometimes your hair doesn't want to part in the same place, or, you know, maybe you didn't have time to wash it before you got to the theater and it's not going to act the same way. Having a wig just makes everything look right every day. And it's easier for us to maintain. Because after the show, it gets a little beat up and, you know, sometimes fuzzy, depending on the action on stage, or if they're wearing a hat or a headband or any, you know, hair accessory. So it's just more consistent if we're able to control what that looks like. Does that make sense? And also, the 30-minute pre-show, like, if somebody has a really extensive updo, 30 minutes is, they're not going to be able to do anything else.
That's right. True. You won't be able to get dressed.
Yeah. So, like, if you have a team of hair, like, crew, wig crew, you know, that would be one person that couldn't help out the rest of the team.
But with a wig, then you mostly just have to, like, pin curl and slap it on, and you're done in 5-10 minutes?
Yeah, most of the time, at least our actors now, where I work now, which is Hale Center Theater in Sandy, Utah, our actors are pin curled when we see them, and then they have a 5-minute wig call.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, and honestly, it's easier to work with. This is going to sound bad. I love humans, but it's a lot easier to work with a wig that doesn't talk back to you.
And it's at the right height, and you can move it around and get to all sides, and it's right. Not moving on its own. I can definitely see that.
I can put a corsage pin into the head without injuring this person. I can do like a roller set and put a corsage pin in the head. So on a human, I can't do that.
Not easily, at least.
Exactly.
A little bit more difficult.
But another part of my job at Hale Center Theater is I'm the resident cosmetologist. So that means I do all the continuity haircuts. So if we do haircuts for the show, we'll wait about a month, 6 weeks, maybe about halfway through our runs. I'll do another round of haircuts to make sure that the men keep their looks throughout the run of the show.
So how long do you run then?
We have quite long runs. Sometimes we just opened cash on delivery on January 12th, and that runs for 2 months.
Wow. In 2 months, I do about 4 or 5 shows.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and all the theaters around us, their runs are like 2 weeks. So, yeah, we do a lot. Our runs are very long, and we have a unique situation at Hale because we are working year-round. We don't have, like, summers off or holiday, you know what I mean? Like, our season goes from January 1st to January 1st.
Do you have a core group of performers, or is it just whoever comes in per show?
They audition multiple shows at once, but we do have some performers that we use multiple times per season, but it's not pre-cast. Like, they have to come to all the auditions and audition just like everybody else.
Right. So it's not like you have a core group of 20 and they're just in every single show.
No.
So when you do wigs, is it different when you do a wig that you know is going to run every single day for the next 8 weeks, as opposed to, say, a lot of operas that are like 2 weekends or something? Do you create them differently, or do you maintain them differently? How, or is there any difference at all? Is it the same if you have one performance versus 30 performances?
That's a good question too. I think it would be put together differently. I try to keep my styles as simple as possible, because if somebody, you know, pulls out a section or whatever, I want to make it easy on myself to fix it.
That makes sense.
But yeah, and still, like, the style can still be beautiful, and it can still be right, but it could also be as simple as possible.
Right. You're not spending, like, 6 hours with curls and...
Right. My first show at Hale, I would spend probably 3 to 4 hours a day doing maintenance on the show.
On all the wigs, just to make sure that they're ready for every single performance?
Yeah. And now we're trying to streamline our existence there, because it's like I have a day job. I work 10 to 6 Monday through Friday. And so during that time, we start the day with maintenance. So right now we're maintaining Cash on Delivery and Hunchback of Notre Dame, which we just opened on Monday.
Wow. Congratulations.
thank you. So we start the day with maintenance, and then I have one coworker, so that our department is 2 people, and we alternate designing shows. This season we are doing 10 shows total.
And do so most of them overlap? Like you said, you have 2 shows running at the same time right now?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And actually, the next 2 shows, we open a week apart. So we will be teching those 2 shows at the same time.
That sounds really bad.
It's crazy.
It sounds intense. But then that totally makes sense why you would design one and your coworker would design one, because trying to design two shows in tech at the same time would just be even more insane.
And at this point now, we're both designing two shows at the same time.
Right. Like
I started measurements on Monday when we opened Hunchback for my next show, Music Man.
And when does that one open?
That opens, man, I wish I knew the date. Sometime in April.
Well, good. That kind of leads me to my next question then. Like, how long does it take you? Do you make the wigs, or do you ventilate there, or do you guys kind of have wigs already created? Because I know it's different based on budget.
Yeah, and I would love to talk about the differences between like Utah Shakespeare Festival and us
at Yale.
And I do have a twin story about that, actually.
Yes! Wrap them all up in one!
So at Hale, because our build times are so short, like we have 4 to 6 weeks to build each show. And some of the shows are fine because they're not really big, but we do have some big shows this season. We're doing Scarlet Pimpernel. We're doing Newsies. So that's going to be like a million haircuts for me.
Yeah. Less wigs, just a lot of haircuts.
Music Man is a big hair show. And we're doing Wizard of Oz as well. So another big hair show with multiple wigs on a bunch of people. So we have to really budget our time wisely. So we do ventilate, but usually we'll ventilate 2 to 4 wigs per show. And then once those wigs are done, they go into our stock. So we're able to pull a bunch of already ventilated wigs for like the ensemble in all of these shows.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, so we've been able to build our stock quite a bit since Trisha and I have been there.
Okay, I'm asking a really stupid question, but
for
you guys
5 years.
Oh, both of you for 5 years?
Yeah, Trisha's been there, I think, for 6, and I've been there for 5.
Nice. What is ventilating? You just hang it out to dry?
So,
I don't... I'm sure that's not the answer, but that's what I keep picturing in my head.
So ventilating is the act of hand tying hair into a, we call it lace, but it looks like hexagonal tulle, if that makes sense.
Yes, I know what that is. Okay.
Yeah. So the act of ventilating is to tie hair into knots to make the hairline or whatever part of the wig you're building look more realistic.
Got it. So then you say you have a selection of them, and I know people's heads are different sizes due to hats. So sometimes you have to build new ones because it's not the right color, it's not the right size of head or something like that?
Yeah. Size isn't as big of a concern for us because most of the wigs we buy are stretchy. But we also know how to, you know, expand a wig for someone else, or, you know, take in darts to make it smaller. But yeah,
I never thought about doing that with wigs.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like a piece of clothing. I mean, it should fit you. It should look, you know, it should look like it's yours.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
So Stacey, what's cool about CCM and why she was so excited to take this, class in her undergrad is that very, very few universities teach how to ventilate.
I don't remember if anyone even wore wigs at my university.
Yeah. So even if you have a wig department, like, it's just very, very rare to teach it. It's like a dying art. I think there's very few schools that even do it now. So CCM, I know when I was there, it was a big, big deal because they're one of the few educational institutes that still ventilate wigs and teach this to the next generation. And they might be one of the few schools left in the United States that does it.
So, yeah, there are two that I
two?
Know of.
Yeah.
CCM and then University of North Carolina School of the Arts.
Ah, of course. That totally makes sense. And I think that's also why so many CCM grads are like on Broadway or doing big houses, because they're the only ones who know how to do this. So,
yeah, NCSA is well represented out there, too.
Oh, yeah, they are. They're everywhere.
Well, I'm sorry, UNCSA.
Make sure you get all your letters in there. But you say you also buy wigs. So sometimes you guys buy pre-made wigs just depending on...
Lots of times, just because our build times are so short, lots of times we only have time to what is called front a wig. So what that means is that we'll buy a store-bought wig and we will cut the front off. We'll attach the lace, the hexagonal tool, onto the foundation, and we'll just hand tie the hairline.
So like that it still matches the person.
Yeah, so it still looks like it's theirs, but the whole back of the wig is just a store-bought thing.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's a fast way to achieve what we need to achieve. There's a lot of companies out there that will do fully hand-tied wigs. We did a few at Utah Shakespeare Festival. I know like some opera companies also have the time to do fully hand-tied wigs. Mm-hmm. And that just means you build the whole foundation and ventilate from nape to hairline.
So how long does that take?
It depends on the person, but usually it's about a week of work. So 48 hours, sometimes more. It depends on the size of the person's head you're building for. Mm-hmm.
And that's just to tie the hair in, not to design it or, not to actually do a pattern or
style it. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Foundations don't take as long. Man, it's been a long time since I've made a foundation. since my time at CCM, probably. But yeah, the foundation probably, I'm going to guess like 15 to 20 hours, depending on, if the drape gods are with you and if, because yeah, you have good days and bad days for sure.
Right.
I mean, I do. I don't know about it.
Pretty sure it's universal.
Yeah.
I just remember all of the students, there was always pictures that the kids at CCM were posting, where they had, cellophane kind of around their head and then all these lines drawn over it and to try to get their hairline.
I talked a little bit about head tracing when I was at Milliken. So that's what you've seen, Cindy. That is a head tracing. So to do a head tracing, we use saran wrap and we will saran wrap around the person's hairline. So we'll like get all of the hair up and off their face and off their hairline, which a lot of people call a wig prep. So like pin curls or braids or wrapping the back of it or whatever works the best for that person.
Out of its face.
Yeah. Out of your face and as flat as possible. And then we will lay the saran wrap across the hairline and we'll use tape. Scotch tape works really well. Some people use packing tape. It just depends on what you're used to, what you want to use. So the packing tape makes the saran wrap stiff. And then you go around the hairline with a Sharpie and draw in the hairline of that person. People will mark like where the ears are. Some will do where the eyebrows are. Some will do just for like points of reference. Some people will draw directions in. Some people will draw like hair directions, like hair growth directions.
But if your hair is up in curls, then how do you know what way it goes?
You're still able to tell just because you're right there where the hair is coming out of the skin. So you can see like if the hair is growing in a different direction than the other hairs around it.
Oh,
so like, okay. If the person has a whorl or a cowlick or something like that, like you can mark that in as well.
Yeah. I was going to say, I have one in the center, like right off the center of my forehead. That's why I stopped wearing bangs because they would never stay down anyways. Every time I tried brushing them down, they just like popped up. So I'm like, I guess I'll just grow these ones out.
Yeah, and that's all stuff you can add, too. So, like, if the character in the show is supposed to have a cowlick, you can draw that on your tracing so you know where that will sit on that person's head. Does that make sense?
You could add that into your design when you design the wig. That's so cool.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, that's one of the things that I love so much about my job is, like, you can fully customize this piece for whoever is going to wear it for that show.
Yeah,
and make it as crazy or not crazy as you want.
Yep. And you can add whatever colors you want. You can blend whatever colors you want. Like, I've had some wigs that, you know, it's all dark and there's like the white streak, kind of like Bride of Frankenstein, nice. Sort of.
But, very,
you know, so
X-Men Rogue.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And I love the moments where you have your wig fitting and your actor is sitting there and you put the wig on them and they're like, oh, okay, I see who I'm supposed to be now. Like,
right.
This feels like my character. I'm there. And that is like the best feeling in the world.
So that's a good segue. How much research do you do on all these characters? Like, do you read the script over and over? Do you talk to the director? Do you talk to the performer themselves to kind of see like where they're taking this character? Like, how do you come up with these designs? Like you said, it's so personal to each of the performers, and it kind of, when you put a wig on a performer, same with shoes, they kind of like become that person. So how do you make that happen for them?
I do quite a bit of research. It's one of my favorite parts of the process. You know, I find out what period the show is supposed to be set in, the era. And I work a lot with Pinterest. It's just so easy. I know. And Pinterest is so wrong so much. But like, oh, I like have a bit of familiarity with hair history. So like, if it's like, oh, 1940s, whatever, and it's like a 60s bouffant, like, no.
You're like, no. That's
I know that it. That's wrong. But just for the sake of getting an image file together for the show, like, that helps me so much with silhouette. I tend to see a couple of images and I say, oh, I like this element of this hairstyle. I want to combine it with this one or whatever. Mm-hmm. I like to collage a lot for characters. So I'll have like 3 or 4 images that I pull from for each character. Once I have a cast, I also add the actor's headshot onto my research page for that person so that I can see if this style is going to flatter this person.
Or, oh, like, yeah.
If I need to, we double cast at Hale, so I have 2 of everything. So maybe one style on one actor is not going to be as flattering on the other. So I like to be able to look at all of that together.
Oh, cool. So you don't necessarily have the same wig for the two if they're double cast. It's just whatever fits that person or the same design wig.
Usually we twin everything. So oh, okay. For my Music Man, I have bought 2 Marion Peru wigs and I've bought 2 Mrs. Peru wigs. And those are the wigs we're going to build for the show. I don't believe in sharing wigs. I think that's disgusting.
Yeah.
And so everybody has their own look, and you know, sometimes we do change up the style just slightly to make sure that that person looks their best.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not really involved in the process until after auditions, and then as soon as I get a cast list, I can go, like, I can call them in for measurements and take their head tracing so that I can get started on the ventilating work for the show. And then I have a couple weeks where I'm able to just pump some stuff out, like build what I need to build and start some styling. Then I have fitting weeks and haircut weeks, and then we go into tech and then we open. So that's kind of how we roll at the Hale. And meanwhile, we're also having meetings for the next show sometimes while we're building, you know, the like Music Man or whatever.
Right.
Also having meetings for My Son Pinocchio, like, sooner than I want to, I'm sure.
And then while also maintaining the show that is currently open.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm doing Hunchback maintenance every morning.
That's a lot of ventilating.
Yeah. And so
a lot of styling.
My coworker and I are trying to streamline our process. So I've taught my wig crew how to do most of the maintenance in Hunchback. So it cuts down on my time that I'm spending on Hunchback so that I can move on to Music Man, to My Son Pinocchio, to all of the other things that are happening this season.
So what?
No, I want to talk. I want a question.
Okay. Yeah.
Did you go to school? I mean, not go to school, but did you go to, I forget what it's called, where hairstylers go? Like, if I went and got my hair cut, and most of them have a certificate to learn how to do that. Do you have one of those?
I do. I do have my cosmetology license. I went to school in the state of Utah. So I have my Utah State cosmetology license. And I love that I went. I feel like it was so worth it for me. As a detail-oriented person, it was great for me to see that part of the puzzle in my corner, like what certain haircuts mean, or how to do certain haircuts, or how to achieve certain things with a haircut. Mm-hmm. I remember I went after CCM, so I got my license in 2012. I graduated from CCM in 2008. So it took me a minute to get there, but it was always something I wanted to do. So I think it was great for me to go. I feel like my education is better because I did, like, and for what I'm doing, the way that I went about my education is the best possible situation. Because, like, I learned about wigs. I got all of my, you know, basic styling skills from CCM and from the Utah Shakespeare Festival, where I learned a bunch of stuff. And then going and getting my cosmetology license was great because I could just focus on cutting. I could focus on learning how to color. Like, I knew what I wanted to get out of it, which is unlike a lot of the other students that were there, because, you know, they're 19 and their mom's like, well, if you don't go to college, you have to get something. You have to go to
school. You have to get something, yeah.
So, like, it was great for me because I was focused and I got what I needed to get. I'm using both of those things in my job. Like, I have, like, the perfect job for my set of education, like, my set of certifications.
So, did you have this current job when you decided to get your cosmetology license because you knew it would come in handy, or you got your license and then you got this job?
I got my license and then I got this job. I got my license actually while I was working at the Utah Shakespeare Festival and teaching a class at SUU, which is, Southern Utah University in Cedar City, Utah.
I've only been there once, but it's the one time I was there, it was really gorgeous. Did you teach? Did you teach?
I did. I taught one semester. It was just a basic wig appreciation class. Most of my students were costume designers. So it was great for them to kind of get an appreciation for what we do and how we can help them as costume designers.
Right, because you work so hand in hand all the time. Like,
we do. Yes.
Yeah, I've only known people who the costumes falls. I mean, wigs and makeup fall under costumes.
Yes, and a lot of places are like that still. I would say the majority of places are like that. So you have your costume designer, and then the hair and makeup person at that place would most likely be called a wig master. And so the difference between a wig master and a wig and makeup designer is the wig master realizes the costume designer's vision for the hair in the show, and the wig and makeup designer creates the vision and then realizes their own vision.
And what is it that you do at Hale currently? You create your own?
I am a wig and makeup designer at Hale. At the Utah Shakespeare Festival, I was a wig master, and I worked with up to three costume designers a season.
But it's an awesome experience, though.
Yeah, no, it was amazing. My time there was some of the best times and the best learning experiences for me.
That's really cool.
Yeah. They have an awesome reputation.
They do, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard about Utah Shakes forever.
Yeah.
So you said you don't like to share wigs. You think it's disgusting, but you say you use wigs again. So how do you, once a wig's done its run of the show,
clean?
Yeah. How do you clean it? What do? You stick it in a bag, you put it in a closet, you take out its curls. Like, what do you do to keep it somewhere until you need it again?
So first strike, we will remove all the styling elements, like bobby pins, rubber bands, like all of the things that hold the style in place. We'll brush everything out. We will wash it. We have a shampoo sink in our shop, and we'll wash it with shampoo and conditioner so that we get all of the yuckies out of the foundation. And then we put them in a braid, and we hang them, like, hanging in a closet. And they just chill there until you go pull them for their next show.
I think Can you send a picture of that? I want to attach that when we release your podcast. Yeah. You just open a drawer and it's like a rainbow closet of hair. Well, that's what I'm picturing.
It's a storage room technically, but we call it the closet. So yeah, I'll send you a picture of our Z racks that are holding our entire wig stock.
That is, I'm going to be so excited.
people get freaked out by it.
Like, because it looks like you scalped people.
Yeah, it just looks like you have a bunch of animals and like skins like hanging off.
It's kind of perfect timing because I had to return a bunch of wigs from Picasso Le Pinagil today to our wig guy. And he does wigs for all the theaters around the Long Beach, Southern California area. And so in the back of my car, I had about 6 foam heads with wigs on them. Mm-hmm. Driving around. I think I posted a picture on Instagram. Opened the back door and I had a bunch of benches and tables and a bunch of wigs. Yes. My cousin said it looks like you're killing people or something. I was like, yes, I collect pretty hair. Stick them on foam heads.
Yeah, my personal favorite is when cosmetology students put their mannequins in their back window of their cars. Like, it's freaky.
We have a life mold. We have the, like, waist up to neck of my husband when we work on costumes for cosplay. And it sits in our bedroom window. So you can look in and see half a body standing there. And it's really creepy when we first built it and moved it in there because, you know, it wasn't used to it. And I'd walk by and there'd just be this white figure, human size, standing in the corner next to the window.
Yes.
Like, oh, okay. Yeah. It's not moving.
I love it. I had a professor actually at CCM. We had a portfolio class and there were 3 of us in my MFA class at CCM. We were all in this portfolio class and our teacher was like, why do you have all these pictures of these faceless heads in your portfolio? Like, I don't like looking at that. And I was like, this is what we use. Like, if we didn't use these, like, our portfolios would be weird.
Yeah, how do you show off the wig if you can't put it on anything? I mean, I guess on a person, but...
Well, I mean, I think she was just freaked out that the blocks don't have faces on it.
Yeah, but I get more freaked out when...
Like, it was like a personal preference.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I get more freaked out when the actors or kids or whatever draw faces on them. Because then they got, like, bright red lips and big blue eyes, and I'm like, okay, that's even creepier than just a white foam face.
Like, olive oil eyelashes and, like, all the things.
Yeah. No, it's...
Terrifying nightmares.
Exactly. And I think that's worse.
I agree. I mean, I even think the face without the, you know, the red lips or the big olive oil eyelashes, they're creepy, too. I'd rather see a faceless block.
That would probably
just
be better.
Just like a white styrofoam. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the one we have in our house when we do mask, I melted it a little bit. So it's got a little bit of burn on one side of the face because I hit it too long with the heat gun.
Kind of a stroke.
Yeah.
That's funny. So we've been mostly talking about hair and wigs, but do you do makeup as well?
I have done makeup as well. Right now at Hale, we do like a makeup training. So design makeup. So I will draw like a makeup chart. And sometimes if it's a specialized makeup, we provide a lot of the makeup. And then we will train the actors how to execute the makeup themselves. But I've had some jobs where, mostly in opera, where I actually apply the makeup. And I miss it.
Really? Yes. It is very much an opera thing, but I was actually pushing for that when I was a production manager at an opera company. It was a very small opera company. We could only afford one hair and makeup artist. And I was like, guys, I can't call you 4 hours early so that she can do everybody's makeup. Like, we'll bring you in early. We'll do a training session. She'll draw pictures. And you guys need to at least know how to put your base on. You need to put eyes on. You need to do the basic stuff. And if she can go in and, you know, if she needs to add certain things, like when we did... Hansel and Gretel, you know, like the doof fairy, you know, needed some like glitter and stuff. Great, she can do that, but I'm not paying, you know, and I'm not calling you guys in 4 hours early so she could spend half an hour with each one of you.
Right.
So I think it's so important for all performers just to know the basics about makeup and then.
Sure. You know. Yeah. And how to make themselves look good on stage.
Right.
Because I can't. And the difference. I don't do any of that. Like, I wear makeup maybe 3 times a year, and that usually consists of some eyeshadow and lip gloss. So,
I'm useless. Same. As a makeup person, like, I don't personally wear makeup every day, but I know a lot of things. And I can, like, I can paint other people, and I can tell other people how to do it. So
that's perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, so you don't have to be, like, a makeup master to be a makeup designer.
You just gotta be... I guess I have a good eye for it.
You just have to be savvy.
That makes sense. Do they teach any of that in cosmetology school, or is it all just like hair focus mostly?
We touched on it briefly. I think there was one chapter in the Milady textbook that we used. But a lot of the girls are like super into makeup and that's what they want to do. Mm-hmm. But personally, in my school, we didn't really focus a lot on it. And we, in my class, we totally skipped the wig chapter because
really?
I was there and I just brought some wigs in and kind of did like a show and tell and kind of talked about how we take care of them. But honestly, like, cosmetologists are kind of scared of wigs. Like, I was shocked at how scared they were. And I was like, really, guys? Like, you cut this every day. Like, why?
Yeah, this is what you do on a daily basis.
About this.
Is it because it's human hair but not attached to a human? Would they feel different if it was fake hair?
Yeah. Like the nylon stuff? We had some mannequins that were synthetic, and they weren't freaky about that. But, like, they were freaky about holding a human hair wig.
Some people
were like, oh, this is cool, but, you know, and I have some coworkers that are like, that scares me, like, that's gross, like, that's human hair. I'm like, what else do you want me to use? Like,
if you want it to look like humans, then, you know, that's the best thing you want use.
That's what people do, they donate their hair.
So in cosmetology school then, because don't you guys practice with wigs? Like, when you learn to cut, don't you cut on wigs? So that's all synthetic?
We used, at least at my school, we used mannequins that had human hair, but it was, like, the worst quality human hair possible.
Well, yeah, they're not going to give the good stuff to a bunch of students who are just going to kill it.
Who are just going to cut it off. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Because we ended up, like, giving them all buzz cuts at the end.
Yeah, because you can only cut it so many times and you're like, well, no more hair.
Yeah, I think I learned 2 women's cuts and then 2 men's cuts on it, and then it was done. But we did use it for roller setting, like when we did our shampoo and set styles, like old lady hairstyles, that sort of thing with them.
That makes sense. Yeah. I always wondered that because, you know, I used to go to get my hair cut at a cosmetology school close to me, and you always see these wigs that, you know, have like no hair on them, and I'm like, well, how did you learn to cut? It's like, but I guess you learn with the longest length first and you just like work your way up.
Yep And we did like a long layer cut, a short layer cut, and then we did men's cuts, and then, then people took them wig. Home and put them in their personal shooting range or whatever they wanted to do.
In the back of their car, or like you said.
Yeah. Interesting. A shooting range. You can learn how to style it after someone you don't like.
Man, we had one guy in our class at school, and he was like, yeah, I'll put them in my shooting range. And so he got like 20 of them and took them home.
You know, whatever makes you happy. He probably released a lot of stress. He felt much better afterwards.
I'm sure he loved it.
Oh, Utah. I feel like
those weren't wigs. They were just machine-made mannequin heads. So they have, like, the face and stuff. So, you know, right. People didn't have to be freaky about it.
That's awesome. So, just jumping back a little bit, how did you go from... So you're at Utah Shakes for 6 seasons. So obviously you were there after you left CCM.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got your cosmetology license. So, like, did you did you do anything in between that and starting at Hale Center Theater, or did it, how was that transition? Did you bounce around a little bit? Did you freelance?
I did. For the first, I think my first and second year as wig master. So my last three seasons, I was the wig master. So those first two seasons I was wig master, I was traveling from Cincinnati, and I would go to Sarasota Opera at the beginning of the year, and I would do some opera there, and then I would go to Chicago and do some opera there, and then I would come. I did a couple guest designs at Hale Center Theater, so I would do that in the spring, and then I would go to Cedar for the summer and fall, and then I did that for 3 years.
Just, yeah, bouncing around, but yep. Consistent work.
Yeah, I had year-round work. I think I had 1 or 2 months off, and it was great. I could have take vacation with my family. And then actually, I met my coworker at the Utah Shakespeare Festival in 2009. That was the first time we met. And then after I graduated from cosmetology school, I was looking for a job, and she was like, "Hey, why don't you come up here and design some stuff with me at Hale?" And I was like, awesome. So that's kind of how I got in the door there. And I've been there ever since.
Yeah, we were talking about this with Katie when we did the interview with her, that's how she got her jobs too. Where like a friend said, "Hey, go over here." And a friend said, "Hey, I'm working here. I need help."
Yeah. I mean, networking in this line of work is huge.
It's right. Yeah, one of the only ways to really get somewhere.
Like it's almost more important than what you know, is who you know.
Yeah, I can see that as true. There's definitely been a few people I've worked with, and I'm like, how did you ever get this job? But yeah,
that's and they're it. Like, oh, so and so's my bestie. Okay.
But for the most part, they're usually pretty good. But yeah. I think that's also what makes it difficult in the very beginning to get started, is because you don't necessarily have those connections yet, you know, so it's really hard to get your foot in the door. And I had a teacher tell me once, which I think I've said before on the podcast, it takes like 5 to 7 years once you get going before, if you can make it 5 to 7 years, you're pretty much set after that, because it kind of takes that long to, number one, kind of figure out what the hell you're doing, and to, you know, really get good at what you're doing. But to also get the reputation and meet enough people that after that point, you start. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're in college and someone tells you that, you're like, oh my God, how am I going to last 5 to 7 years? And then all of a sudden it happens and you're like, oh, that wasn't that bad.
But yeah, it's crazy to me. Like, I've been doing wigs and makeup since 2006, which that's like 12 years.
Yeah.
How did that even happen?
I don't even know where 10 out of 12 of those years went, but yeah.
I know.
It's so awesome. And I know it was definitely true for me, because for the first 5 years, I had some consistent jobs, but I feel like I was like trying to market myself more than anything else. And I think it was literally like year 6 or maybe year 5. When all of a sudden people started contacting me to be like, oh, are you free? And I was like, how did you hear about me? And I was like, you're right. It's 5 to 7 years. And then you're good. So you just kind of make it that long.
Yeah. Well, that was something that was great about Utah Shakespeare Festival. I got to meet a lot of the up and coming, like graduates, like new graduates I would hire, or, you know, a first year in their master's degree, or like juniors or seniors in their undergraduate degree. And I felt like I made a lot of connections that way.
Yeah.
Like, I met a lot of people. Hale is a little different. I kind of feel out of the loop at Hale. Because, like, people are like, oh, do you know anyone to take this position in wherever? And I'll be like, actually, I don't. And that makes me sad.
Aw.
Is it because you work with the same people?
I mean, I want to help people get work.
Yeah.
I want to make sure I can help people like fill positions, and I want to help people who are still learning, like get a job that will be beneficial for them. And yeah, I can't do that anymore.
I guess that's the good and bad about having a year-round position, because so many theater companies are like 9 months or 3 months. You have a summer job and then you can go back and forth. You know, when I was at TCO, I was there for 9 months out of the year, and then I would go to Caremore for 3 months, you know, and so I was constantly kind of meeting different people. But
yeah. Yeah. Well, and I will tell you, like, I feel so lucky to have a full-time hair and makeup position. Like, at
yeah.
all.
Yeah.
Like, I don't full-time, like, benefits, like, all the things. Like, I didn't even know that existed.
Yeah.
It doesn't exist very many places.
Every company I've worked at, well, number one, they're not year-round. They're partial year. But even then, I think almost every company has only had, like, you hire in the hair and makeup for that production, you know? They're not a full-time position. They're not full-time staff. They don't get those benefits.
Yeah, and that's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard for a lot of reasons. Taxes are hard when you do that.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah,
Cindy gets to worry about a lot of those.
Right? Yeah. Like,
I mean,
how many...
I'm so lucky. I just have my one W-2 now. I used to have, like, I-9s from, like, 10 states.
That's exactly what I had to deal with. I'm like, okay, time to do taxes. And everyone's like, someone was talking to me about it the other day who literally has one job. She's like, oh, yeah, it takes me like a couple, like an hour or two. And I was like, yeah, no, this took me like 3 solid days to get all my receipts in order and all of my together and figure out all my per diems and what states I was going to go to. And
Yeah, I don't miss those days.
You're like, I'm very lucky here. Oh, wait, okay. So I think we're coming to the end because we're trying to keep these at about an hour. What was your twin story?
Okay, yeah, twin stories.
I have two. One of them is actual twins, and one of them was an experience where we had to create two sets of twins for Comedy of Errors at the Utah Shakespeare Festival. Our two Dromios did not look anything alike. They did pretty well casting the other set of twins. So in order to make them look like twins, my wig master at the time and I built two fully hand-tied white wigs for these two guys to make them appear more twin-like. So that's my first twin story.
So did you make the wigs completely the same, or did you give them, like, one had a cowlick on one side, one had a cowlick on the other side?
We actually, we took both of their head tracings, and we made a hybrid of both of their hairlines. So they both have the same hairline. We used the same hair. Like, one of the guys had, like, a 22-inch head, and one of the guys had a 24.5-inch head. So, like, they're literally nothing alike. So we were just, like, so we used the same hair, we used the same hairline, and we built the wig in the same style. We gave them the same haircut. And so, like, on stage, it made them appear to be more twin-like.
Yeah. Did they think it was creepy?
No. People loved them.
Yeah.
I mean, you could definitely tell the difference because their body types were two totally different types and stuff. But
just, they're fraternal. That's what happens.
Exactly. Exactly. And my second twin story is an almost twin story because I had, for Hunchback, I had a set of twins that were cast as two different roles. And I was all like, oh my gosh, am I supposed to make these two look different? Because they're identical twins. And then one of them had to drop the show because of medical issues. So I didn't end up having to worry about it.
Aww.
But yeah, I was like, what do I do to make them look different? Color their hair.
They're identical. What else am I supposed to do?
Yeah. Well, and still people are confusing the one for the other. Because the other has done a few shows with us, and this is the second twin's first time with us. So people keep thinking that he's his twin, and he's not.
Right, because that's who they're familiar with.
Right.
Luckily, he's used to it.
Yeah, no, I'm sure he is.
Good stories. Yeah, I never thought about the Shakespeare having the two together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a really fun challenge.
Yeah.
And it turned out being really cool.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome.
Yeah. Well,
thank you so much for joining us. Thank you so much for telling us about wigs and hair and teaching Stacey what it means to ventilate a wig.
I learned a lot. I don't know anything about hair. I brush it and I wash it.
I totally feel that way about lighting. Like, you could talk to me for 6 hours about lighting, and I'd be like, what? I don't know what you're talking about.
Exactly. That was like, okay, I'm going to have to ask now before we go through this whole podcast. And at the end, I'll be like, okay, wait, what were you talking about for the last hour? Thought that would be bad.
Yeah. No, I'm so glad. Confused. Thank you for having me, and thank you for having me share those things with the world.
Yeah. The world needs to know these things. They're important things to know. So thank you.
Yeah. True.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Hopefully we'll stay in touch and it won't be another 8 years before I talk to you again.
I hope so too, but you know what? That's cool.
Like, either way, whatever.
Like, I know we're still friends, so that's all that matters.
That's true.
That is that's the important true. Part. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. For more, visit our website at twinstalktheater.podbean.com and subscribe on iTunes or Google Play Music. You can also interact with us on Facebook or Instagram at Twinstalk Theater. Title music, Dance Macabre, is provided by Kevin McLeod of incomtech.com under Creative Commons License 3.0.